Blog Talk Radio.
Satellite Guys Radio presents another edition of Satellite Nation with your hosts, Michael and Dave. We look forward to taking your calls. Do you have a comment for the show? Or maybe you have a question for us? If so, we look forward to your call at 877-SAT-GUYS. That is 877-728-4897. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Dave.
This is Michael. Dave's still working on pushing a few patch buttons there. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Mike. Hey, boys.
Who's this?
It's Dan.
It's Dan. Hey, Dan.
Oh, not much going on.
First, I thought it was Brian. We're supposed to have Brian on tonight. We're still working on issues on that, but, okay. There we go. But Dan, can you hang on just a second here?
Yes, you can.
Anyway, it's Satellite Nation, an episode of it. Dave will be here in just a second. Tonight we have an exciting episode. We have Brian tonight from Satellite AV. And to talk about a few things, take your calls, answer your questions. And let's see if I can put Brian on the line here. One, two, three.
Hello.
Brian, are you there?
Satellite Guys. Hello.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Satellite Guys.
How you doing tonight, Brian?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
sir.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, great. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Pretty good.
Well, what are we going to talk about?
Well, first of all, you're going to tell us, since you're our guest tonight, introduce yourself to people who don't know who you are and tell us about your giveaways.
Okay, well, my name is Brian Gohl. I'm a president and founder of Satellite AV. We run a business where we do product development. We do warranty support center for manufacturers. A couple of you have taken a tour of the facility here. We do quite a bit of other things as far as product reclamation accounts with Fortune 500 companies. And we also run in the satellite arena. We have Glory Star Christian Satellite, which is a direct-to-home where we aggregate Christian services and family services off of Galaxy 19, and we provide a unique experience to people who want to watch television, but they're not enthralled with becoming a tech geek in order to watch TV. So quite a bit different than the Satellite Guys group, where we're kind of like loving the technical end of it, but kind of sometimes get bored with watching the television. This evening, what we're going to do is going to give away a Micro HD satellite receiver, GeoSat Pro Micro HD FTA receiver, and we're going to do that at the end of the show. I don't know who's going to be taking down the names for the drawing, but we'll take a list of everybody who comes on. And at the end of the show, we'll give away a Micro HD. And then just kind of randomly throughout the show, I thought we would just maybe you could push one of those magical buttons on your console there. And randomly, we'll just give away two or three or whatever the mood strikes. GeoSat Pro SL1 PLL LMBFs, and we'll include free shipping on these items to anybody who calls this evening. So let's get those calls rolling in, and let's talk satellite.
Yeah, and let me include this too. It depends on how many calls we got tonight, who calls in, but I'm still giving away a pub membership to Satellite Guys. So if you're not a pub member, you will get a pub membership. And if you're already a pub member, I'll add a year to your pub membership. So wherever you're at, I'll just tack a year onto it. If you got a month left, you have 13 months, If you got 11 months, so-and-so.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
All right. Well, how am I sounding? I'm on doing a call out on Skype. Couldn't call in, but... using Skype with a snowball mic and feeling kind of DJ tonight.
You sounded good on my end.
Yes, I'm great.
Excellent. And Michael, was that your phone or was that Dave that had the hum? Sounds like you got it taken care of.
It's not mine.
That was me.
Well, I hear a little hum out there, so maybe we'll get a Skype account for you.
I've got a Skype account, but, you know, through satellite, it's got the... And I've got the newer satellite internet with the high speed you can get. I've actually got the top package, but... And still got a little bit of delay, so I just choose to still call them on the phone. But, yeah, I've had the phone crew out here a couple times, and they... It's still a little bit there, but it's mostly gone.
Yeah. Well, it sounded much better. Well, what do we want to talk about this evening? I'm all ears, and you know, I've been in satellite for over 30 years now, and started out working trucks, doing uplink, been in the television part of the end of it, and just if you can tell by the creases in my forehead, I've worn many hats through the years, and know a lot of people, and try to learn every day.
Well, let me be the first to ask you a question because we ain't got a, you know, caller yet. We got Dan, you know, listening, but no offense, Dan. Dan, you know, like I said, is a regular caller. I was talking about another day. He calls in a lot, but kind of from your suggestion today when we was talking, Brian, that's a good idea since, you know, you got a real lot of experience in that. Kind of give a quick rundown of weaknesses and strengths in PLL, LMBs, and, you know, mainly what I'm what I want to know is weaknesses. What's better about, you know, the other one opposed to? So go ahead.
Well, you know, a lot of us, especially as we're going to S2 and we're seeing higher FEC rates, you know, we're starting to see a lot of posts up on satellite guys of, you know, hey, why are you guys getting this signal but I'm not? And, you know, a lot of it, of course, has to do with the dish size. And I'm always amused by people who always, you know, brag about having the smallest dish, but then they complain that they can't get a channel.
I agree on that one.
There's a reason. But, you know, a lot of people think of the dish as the antenna, but the reality is the LMBF, of course, is the antenna. So the surface of the dish, as accurate as it is, reflects signal back into the LMBF, and then that travels down the feed horn and is picked up in a little bit of a little element in the back, and then it's converted to a different frequency that will a much lower frequency, so if the losses are much lower, amplified, and then travels down the line to your receiver. So what can go wrong in this scenario? Well, you don't collect enough signal because you don't have a big enough dish or you're not aimed correctly. But then you have problems that are generated by the LMBF itself. Primarily, the issues that most of us fight every day are as LMBs age, they start drifting off frequency. And so when you do a blind scan, maybe something that should be on 11, 11700 ends up on 11703. And then you start doing the reports and everybody's correcting you. Well, you're giving me the wrong frequency. Well, the LMBF is just sending a signal down the line as it converts it from that high frequency coming in off the satellite to the lower frequency coming through the cable. Well, as LMBs heat up and cool down during a day and evening, and also as they age, LMBS, the local oscillation frequency or the conversion frequency, starts drifting. Well, that of a regular LMBF, which is referred to as a DRO LMBF, those have tuning slugs. And
what does DRO stand for?
I need to pull out my, let's see, direct resonation oscillation.
Yep.
Am I right on that one?
Yes.
That was off the top
of
my head. Okay, thank you. Woo. First test. So a DRO LMBF, is it ages or is it heats and cools? The actual housing can contract, and those slugs that you tune the frequency start pulling away, and the frequency starts drifting. Well, a PLL is a phase lock loop, and it uses a crystal to maintain a center frequency. And so PLL LMBFs are not affected by the heat, the cooling, and the aging process, because they are, the frequency is controlled by a crystal rather than a tuning slug. Well, this all sounds great, and you know, what can go wrong with these? Well, the problem with the PLL is that they use a little bit more power, as we've seen a couple threads.
Yeah.
And what happens when you consume more power?
It generates
powder. Yeah, it generates heat inside of the LMBF. And so, you know, a give and take on a PLL LMBF is it consumes a little bit more power. So in exchange, it generates a little bit more internal heat. So what does that do to performance? Performance goes down because the LMBF performs better when it's colder. So it's kind of a you can end up with a much more stable frequency, but you also end up with a little more noise because of the PLL conversion. A lot of us look at LMBFs and we go, oh, it must be a better LMBF because it is a 0.1 dB noise ratio, or it's a 0.2. The reality is most of these LMBFs that anyone sells out there, they're rare if they come below a 0.4 or a 0.3.
Very true.
Most LMBFs out there. Yeah, it's a marketing myth.
Yeah, I'm just going out and say a lot of them lie.
Marketing myth. <Okay. laughs>
You're talking about the competition, not me. The reality is most LMBFs out on the market right now are actually 0.6 or 0.8. You can print anything you want on these LMBF packages or on the label, but the reality is most DROs out there that are just off the shelf that you're buying for $10-$20 most likely is a 0.6 or a 0.8 noise. Well, a PLL cannot be any lower than a 0.5. That's where the technology is right now. So if you see a PLL listed for lower than a 0.5, it's once again a marketing myth. So a lot of people go, okay, well, it's a lot noisier than a 0.2. Well, probably it's quite similar to a DRO type LMBF that you're using. But the advantages are, and we were talking about this in a thread the other day, why am I seeing similar or, in some cases, worse performance on these big, fat signals on 97 West? Well, PLLs really shine when you're looking at these high FEC, low symbol rate signals. Things that won't lock on with the DRO will certainly lock on much better with the PLL. So the weaknesses of a PLL are higher current draw, higher noise, and a little bit more heat. So these are the things when we're developing an LMBF, we try to combat these three things, knowing that if we can address these three issues, we can come up with a better LMBF.
Very good explanation.
Yeah.
So that's been me talking. So tell me about your experiences with PLL.
Mine is about what you said. I'm not really paying attention to the receiver, if it gets hotter or not, but or draws more current. I don't put a meter on it, but it's actually
the LMBF that becomes hotter.
Right. But I'm looking at 4 or 5 screens at one time here. But I have noticed that if I hook up a DRO and say that one has been going, and especially running on a horizontal transponder, I can I mean, I can actually, especially in the winter, I can feel the heat. I mean, it's not hot. I can burn my hand off, but I can actually tell the difference, you know what I mean? And I never thought much about it until he just said that, and that makes perfect sense.
You know, a couple of years ago, there was a guy who's passed away now down in South America that used to do out of footprint reception off of the Osterhot birds. He had some gigantic.
Oh, it was huge, huge.
Yeah, incredible dish, and he experimented with his performance gains where he chilled his LNBF or his LNB.
Yeah.
Liquid cooled LNBF.
Yeah, and so yeah, I know on the forum a couple times we've kind of played around with, you know, chill packs and other things like that. But really, a big performance loss is just because those LNBF electronics heat up and they start losing performance. So if you can come up with a way to put an ice pack, blue ice, whatever you need to. You know, and somebody had a great idea about taking some of those cooling elements out of those 12-volt coolers that they're making for cars now. I thought that was a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Now, our next product that we're working on right now, we've been asked quite a few times, when are we coming out with the SL2 PLL? And that's a product that we're just finishing up the design on right now. We should have that one out in probably the next 3 months or so.
So that's the same thing as this dual output?
Yeah, it's actually, since the first version of PLL, SL1 PLLs came out, we actually had a version chipset change. It's still the same chipset, the same identifier.
Right.
But we're actually reduced the current draw by 30 milliamps. So it's a, you know, instead of it running at about 130, 140, we're seeing draws typically now right around 90 to 100 milliamps. So that's right in the range that we've seen on DROs.
Now, is that on 13 volts?
Let's see. I don't have my sheet right in front of me, but
well,
definitely.
I'm just wondering if there's a difference between if you go vertical and horizontal transponder.
Oh, definitely.
You would think, you know, you know, it's going to draw less current on the. I was just curious to what horizontal vertical is, what's drawing that, you know.
You know, I posted some things up on Satellite Guys about a week ago. Somebody was asking about PLL comparison, and I had included a test on there that showed the current draw between horizontal and vertical. And off the top of my head, I don't remember what it was on that original PLL. But, you know, the great thing is that the changes in chipsets, you know, really for many, many years, we didn't even have PLL chipsets available that were inexpensive enough to put it into a consumer case. So
right.
It's just really cool, you know, Tim over at... DMS has a great PLL. I know Fridge FTA is coming out with one. I think it's a rebranded unit. You know, really all these LNBFs have very similar qualities. If you put them side by side, you might see one that maybe performs a little bit better on a top end frequency. It just has to do how they're tuned.
Right.
But really, you know, there's really no difference in performance between these LNBFs because they're basically using one of two chipsets that are out there. I think the main changes are now, as we see the revision changes come out in these chipsets, we'll start seeing lower current draws, and we're going to start seeing some of these gains increase with lower noises in the future, hopefully.
Good. So from a layman's point of view, or just an average person, the SL2 PLL will be a dual output as opposed to the single output for the ones already out, right?
Yeah, it's operating pretty much identical because they're independent outputs, so whatever loads up one doesn't load up the other. So side-by-side comparison, we are seeing really no difference. Because it's a different housing, we're seeing a little bit different response on frequencies, so you might see a better response on mid-range or upper range or lower range, just depending on your choice of housing. But the electronics are basically the same times two.
Yeah, that's what I'm still. I've been, as you know, I recently been messing with the SL2 bullet, you know, and been trying to figure out if I can tell a difference from one of the, you know, two outputs, two outputs. If I switch over to the other one, can I take tell any difference, you know, because sometimes, you know, there's, you know, a difference between them, you know, ways, depending on where it's designed, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of dual output LNBFs, especially the less expensive ones, that don't have isolated outputs. And
right.
Really, what comes into play, and a lot of people don't think about this till it happens to them, but if you don't have isolated outputs, a lot of times you'll put one receiver on one transponder frequency, and you'll put a receiver hooked up to the other output on another transponder frequency, and you'll have a harmonic between the two, and it will actually wipe out completely one of the transponders.
Yep.
And I know this used to happen quite a bit on dual system installs, and so because we really try pushing two-room sales with the Glory Star, you know, it was very important for us to make sure that tuning one transponder to one room didn't knock out the out a channel in another room.
Yeah, so far I've not, you know, with the bullets, you know, I'm still not fully tested the review yet, but I was like, hey, I think it's isolated. I didn't know if it was.
Is.
I'm pretty sure it was, but I didn't know.
Well, you know, the SL2 bullet, really, you know, we did a custom design on that about 4 years ago now. And we really invested. We pay way too much for that unit just because we use top-notch pre-tested, and they pull products off the line and discard them if they don't meet specifications instead of just, like, giving a typical user loses out. So, you know, in this case here, you know, we pay probably about four times the amount from the factory for that LNBF than we do even for the SL2, the SL1 PLL. And so the SL1 bullet has just been a top performer. And it really is kind of a benchmark that we measure other LNBs against, just because it's a very flat response.
It's far surpassed everything I've tried, and not because I've got you on the air and talking to you. I mean, it really has. And so, it's because you're just kissing butt when I know it. It's just, that's a get one, try it. Hey, call in, we'll give you one free. Take it, try it. See what you think. I really love it. I use it on everything now.
So, is anybody out there listening to us, or is just us four talking?
I don't know.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Let's hit the button here and see.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
Well, we got Dan on hold. Let's bring Dan in and talk to him for a few seconds if he's there patiently waiting.
Hey, you know what? I think the first caller is Dan, so doesn't he deserve one of these PLLs?
I think so.
Hey, Dan, you have a pub membership, and now you have a SL1 PLL.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
So why don't you PM, how do you want to work this, guys? Do you want him to PM me when we're done and we'll get him shipped out?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, Dan, why don't you just PM me after this is over, and we'll get to SL1 PLL shipped out to you at no charge.
Okay. Cool.
Nice.
So that's not cutting into our giveaways. What's that?
I was talking to Dan. I said he's not hooked the first one up yet, has he? I think he's got one already.
So, hey, Brian, what was this positioner deal you were talking about earlier? And you traded somebody for a old Chaparral controller that used the timer 555?
Yeah, actually, earlier, or what was it, the end of last week, trying to remember if it was Chap, I believe. Or Flat Room. He came across a old mechanical polarizer controller, a manual polarizer control with a polarotor, or with a potentiometer where you can just set a mechanical puller rotor to the correct skew. It's just a wall wart with your puller rotor 3 connector, and then you have a potentiometer that you can rotate about 360 degrees. And it reminded me that about years ago in my truck, when I was doing installs for C-band a lot, I had a whole box of these things, and I was just thinking when I saw Flat Moon post this up that I really should look at that, because I have a project right now that is going to use a DSEEK 1.2 commands from a receiver to send commands out to a puller rotor control, a manual polarizer on a C-band dish. And so the problem that we're facing right now is if somebody buys a DSEEK 1.2 motor control and they don't have an old C-band analog receiver or old 4DTV to adjust the polar rotor, their only option is really at that point to go over to a LNBF. Well, you know, a feed horn with independent LNBs and a polarizer gives you a much more optimized signal for C-band and KU for that fact. And so we've just been looking at a way for, to provide an interface so people with current MPEG-2 FTA receivers can not only control the positioner on their C-band dish or their linear actuator motors, but also to control the polarizer, the polarization of their feed. So I've been working on a project here for a while. It's been put away on the shelf, but started revisiting it again, and a couple of the guys on SAT Guys had come up with some really great designs to control the mechanical polarizer, the polar rotor, but it was all pretty much a manual process. It didn't really interface with your receiver, so you could issue a DSEEK 1.2 command, and then that would be memorized by your polar rotor controller to then automatically put your mechanical polarization in the right position. So that's what we're working on right now, is a device that will go in line, and it can it could either be a standalone module, or it could be incorporated into a motor controller, a DSEEK 24 or 36 volt controller. So not only can you control the motor position on a linear jack, but also control your puller rotor again.
Very cool.
So this would allow anybody with any off-the-shelf, it doesn't matter if you buy the receiver from us or you buy from anyone else, you could then control a C-band dish and have complete control over any legacy equipment or optimized feed horns. So, a couple of years ago, Anole was trying to, and other members were trying to get Sadoon. Sadoon Satellite at the time was a sponsor of Satellite Guys.
Right.
And he was working on a prototype, but he never really got much support from the factory. So a factory that I've been doing a lot of work with, in fact, they were the ones that used to manufacture our GeoSat Pro Horizon to Horizon, the GS120 motor for us. I was talking to this gentleman when we were down at CES earlier this year, and I started bouncing the ideas off of him, because this guy used to do a lot of design back in the C-band days of the analog controls, and I kind of told him what my challenge was, and I sent him over some schematics of things I was working on, and he sent back pretty much a complete design, and so we've done a couple mock-ups. Kind of went down a couple wrong paths, but we're at a place now where we have a skew control unit that operates off of the DSEEK 1.2.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it's a direction that nobody's ever taken before, but, you know, why not interface today's receivers with optimized C-band technology and the legacy stuff that we all find, you know, in the backyards around town.
Mm-hmm.
So is it any different than what, I'm sure you've seen too, I've seen schematics on making one of those. I've seen them on eBay selling them for like $20. Is there any difference in what you're wanting to develop and what?
Yeah, imagine it this way. Imagine a polarizer control, let's just call it that for simplicity,
right.
Or a polarotor control. Imagine it having 99 memories built into it, and each one of those memories would memorize a specific orientation of your feed.
Okay.
And so, say, for example, you move your dish over to 139 West for the audio feeds over there.
Right.
And you want to optimize your SKU setting for that. Well, this would memorize your motor setting and associate with it a polarization setting as well.
Okay.
It wouldn't just be horizontal or vertical. It could be any offset from horizontal or vertical for that position.
Okay. That answers that question. Yeah, that just sounds like a bell. I was like, oh, duh, never mind.
No, it's so simple, I can't figure out why nobody's developed this product before. But it's going to be something that's going to definitely catch some attention because, you know, people are paying an extra $100 for a receiver out there right now just because it has polarization control built into it.
Yeah.
But they still have to buy a positioner.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, you know, I'm looking at some of the positioners that are out there right now, and the unit that we're looking at producing is a much more heavy-duty. You know, it's not the design where the connections pop off if you press them too many times. You know, we're looking at putting something out there that is heavy-duty. I want it to put out somewhere closer to 36 volts, so we'll move the actuator faster.
Boy, do I agree with that.
Just like the old analog. And it's going to be able to lift it off of the horizon. You know, how many times do you hear people out there that are having to counterweight their dishes just so they can pull it off the horizon?
Yep.
Because these E-box, V-boxes don't have enough current to draw it up.
Right.
So, you know, we're looking at something where we put out 36 volts, adequate amperage, and then also incorporate a polarotor controller in it as well. And this will just take your standard Seek 1.2 commands off of any receiver that's out there right now and put the fun back into it.
Yeah.
So speaking of moving dishes, I don't know if you have tried one yet, Brian, but those, Michael has, the SG6100s are not too bad. I'm liking the one I'm playing with. I know Michael likes his.
Yeah.
You know, and I was pushing you guys online to get that review up there because, you know, it's harder and harder to find a good motor. And Dave, you and I have talked about this, and Michael as well. You know, it seems like there's not many motors on the market at this point, and when that one came along, it was just like, well, does it work? Is it beefy?
Yeah.
And it sounds like from your review, it's doing good.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, okay, yeah, go ahead and send me one so I can put it down. You want an honest review? I'm going to give you an honest review. I'm going to tell you how bad it is. And I was like, wait a minute, this thing actually works right out of the box.
Yeah, the metal bracket doesn't bend now when you tighten it.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. There's a little body up inside of it, and I've not had time to go out and see it. Like where I'm at, you know, I'm 3,000 miles away from you, Brian, but over in North Carolina, I use 125 a lot, you know, for PBS or whatever. And then the same way off on something else, 61 or whatever. I'm just throwing out a number. And I go all the way from there, all the way across 125. And it does, it goes right to it without changing anything. But the signal's kind of breaking up, it's not quite there. And so I'll tell the receiver to do it, and then go outside and I'll hook my meter up to it so I can see what's going on. and I just barely push the dish with my hand. You can see it, and the shaft up inside the, you can see the shaft move, you know. It's just a hair, but and it's not the dish. I'm not warping the dish. I'm not twisting any metal. I'm just barely pushing with the shaft that's going into the motor housing. It's just barely, you can wiggle it back and forth just a little bit.
Now, the question is that a tensioning issue? Because I know some of the motors in the past couple of years came up like with automatic, what do they call it?
I know what you're talking about, but...
Yeah, basically to automatic tensioning your gears.
Right.
So does this one advertise that it's automatic, or do you have to pop a seal or something to adjust the tension?
I did the review, and I've gotten on other stuff, and I got back to it since last week, because this is the last week I did it, but there is an actual rubber plug you can pull off, and Dave, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen it on it. You pull the rubber plug off, and there's a screw, or kind of a screw-looking thing, and I actually popped out and put a screw on. I can turn it back. I didn't turn it very much, and my hands actually turns. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that's for.
If that's for that or what that's for, but... Anyway, I can put it on, say 125, and it's barely push it, just barely. And the signal goes, you know, my meter just, you know, peaks, or the meter's screaming. And so what I got to do is go in the house, tell the receiver, okay, let's make up for this. You know, let's say I'm a dummy, I ain't got a meter. Let's set it for 125.5. Let's tell the receiver 125.5, say 125, and it will correct it, and it's fine. It's perfect. So,
well, I mean, that could be just a hair off on your pole from being plumb.
Right.
Yeah, there's quite a few things that could
right,
cause that.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. But it could be mine, and it could be me. But there's just a little bit of play in it. It's not a whole lot. But other than that, there's a chart in the back of the manual that tells you, you know, from your latitude, you can go by this, it's your dish elevation of this. And so I did, just like you said, I use a GeoSat Pro 90 centimeter. Put that on there, set it up, and I said, okay, you know, off to my true south. Then I was saying, you know, a lot of times you have to do a lot of adjustments. I said, okay, go, do it. And it went to one, first thing I did was 125, and it was right there on it. Then I went to like 55 or 58 west or something. Boom, and I was like, okay, I like this, except for, you know, on 125, it's kind of like, well, it's there, but it kind of wants to break up a little bit. But it's a good signal, but a cloud comes up, and all of a sudden, I'm like, what? So I went to put the meter on it. I'm like, oh, it's off just barely touching a hair. And it's actually the play in the shaft, so I don't know. But like I said, you can
correct
that.
You know, to kind of identify that, a lot of times if you, say, drop onto a satellite coming from east or west, does it miss the point, but then it lands on it coming from, west to east.
Right.
East to west, you know. So, you know, a lot of times you can kind of identify: is this a mechanical issue of just the direction it's driving and where the, you know, where it's tensioned onto the left or the right, east or the west side.
Right.
Very typical for these motors to have some slack in them,
yeah.
And that's really what that on the SG2100 there was a. Two Allens that you could adjust on them to kind of put a little tension down. In fact, you could tension them so much that motor wouldn't even move.
Right. Oh, I know.
But, you know, that it was a great design. You would have to make sure that it was greased up good, and you just tension them enough and then back them off, and it would be pretty good. It would be interesting to know if this is a bushiness issue on where the shaft passes through, or if it's actually... just a slack in that backlash. That's the word I'm looking for.
Backlash, yeah. And that's how I had
posted a couple other questions and nobody responded to it. It's either because you guys don't know it from your testing, and you could just tell me to shut up right now.
No, I've seen that, Brian. I just, like I said, I just have not got back to it yet. But ask me again.
So nobody's cracked one open yet?
I've not cracked one open yet. I've still got it on the post.
That I can crack open and post.
But I'm going to take it off the pole and put my stab motor back on there, and then I'm going to crack it up. But I've, like I said, I've been busy since last week when I did that. And I've been playing with the 1200 today, so.
Let me play the pole number and see if we can get real quick here.
What's that?
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
Brad, nobody wants micro HD.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm the rat poison that scared everybody away.
I don't know. What's going on?
I'm still here.
I even advertised, you know.
We still got 20 minutes.
Well, if there's anybody out there who wants to call in right now, what do you say we give away another PLL, next caller?
All right.
And a membership. Dave, what's the number? You got it right in front of you. Is the, if they're having trouble, the 877 number?
Yeah, it is.
247-something.
Hold on, let me pull it up.
Yeah, oh, the number three. That I called here?
Yeah. Area code 347-327-9319. We had somebody post online that said they tried to call the toll-free number and it wasn't working, so...
From Canada.
Yeah, so that's probably...
I don't know, I never...
But I think he dialed the wrong number because he dialed 628, and I think it's 728.
Yeah, I had a little trouble...
The wrong number?
Well, I had a little trouble calling into you guys as well.
What happened?
It just said the number was disconnected, so then I called the 347 number and it went right through.
Uh-oh.
Hmm.
And Scott's at a birthday party now, so that's right. Scott, we usually hardly be on here. He's a big record caller, of course, more than Dan is. But he told me he wouldn't be here tonight because he's going to be at a birthday party. And I said, make sure you got a designated driver. And he said, I think it's for a kid's party. And I said, oh, okay. Just joking with him, of course. But anyway...
So I know that Dan was talking to me earlier today, and he was having trouble on 103 pulling in Cozy TV. And from my experience, isn't that 8.9 FEC? And, I mean, you got to be dead on.
Yeah, but Dan
could
also use
an undersized
dish for 103.
Yeah, so on that on the 103, Dan, are you using the dedicated offset SKU?
Hi, you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't cell phone,
ain't you? Yes, I know. I don't have a home phone.
I've got a cell phone. You're echoey, but we got you. Go ahead.
Okay. Is this better now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was using the GeoSat Pro, the PLL, and testing that on 103. And I have a microbud set up on 99 West. And I had to take off my conical to get, because it won't register, it won't pick up a signal with the conical on 103. If I have, it won't fit. So I took the conical off and I can get 103.
We have a new caller.
Hey guys, it's just me, Scott.
Hey Scott, how are you doing tonight?
Okay, I just got back home from the birthday party and was listening on the way back driving, and the 877 Sat Guy's number is working fine.
Okay.
Does this mean we need to give Scott a PLL?
I guess so.
Duh. I got PLLs coming out my ears.
Scott says he don't want one. Did I post the number wrong? I need to go look at that. I might have posted the number wrong. Because I know if it's one of 877 Sat Guys, but now I've converted it, but I may have converted it wrong.
It is working.
Well, anyway,
working?
back to this Cozy TV. You said that you were having trouble locking it, and you're doing that with what size dish?
1 meter.
And you're using a PLL LMDF, you said?
Yes, and it's right next to my C-band LMDF, and I had to remove the conical off my C-band LMDF to have enough room to get the focal point. And I was receiving the Huntington, you know, the beach cams and the microspace, what you're normally supposed to get, and I picked up a few odd feeds. One was from Seattle. A camera from Seattle is just showing up here. Like you could tell there's a football stadium in the background. And something with Linkstar. But every time I... on the transponders for the NBC ones, it was coming in 10%. Nothing higher.
Well, you know, the peer cams, of course, come in. You could have a tuna can for those.
That must be around 1,000 watts. Not really, but...
You know, and a lot of times it's kind of unpredictable for these trucks. You know, when I used to run a truck, we would just push them up as hot as we could before, you know, we'd start getting the network engineer to start telling us to, you know, back off. And so, you know, it's really hard to say, you know, if those were strong or not. You know, it could have been a very strong. Really, on that transponder, are you getting it to show any lock at all, or it's just not locking? Period.
On the NBC ones.
No, on Cozy. Cozy.
On Cozy, yeah, I was getting about 60 to 70% quality.
Okay, but it wasn't scanning in.
Yeah, it was when I would blind scan it. It wouldn't. The beach cams, the microspace ones, the normal ones you're supposed to get, come in. But then the Cozy TV ones don't. It only comes in 10%.
Take a deep breath, Brian.
But so,
well, I'm just kind of...
That doesn't come up in the... That transponder that Cozy's on, it doesn't come up when you blind scan, or it does?
It does not.
Right.
I put it on detailed, and it doesn't.
Well, you know, it may not be... there's two reasons things will not come up in a blind scan. Number one, if their table is not built correctly, if they don't define a program in the stream, you can get a transponder lock, but you don't get a service. If there's no service attached to that transponder... it's not going to log it as a valid transponder, and so it would just show failed. There's a lot of times where transponders will not log in just because of the table builds of it. I'm thinking of an example, though, of kind of an oddity that we ran into many months ago was with that Virgin Island Puerto Rico NUX, where it's a combination of MPEG-2 and H.264. And it was just that combination of having different signal types on the same carrier that caused pretty much every receiver out there kind of threw up on that one.
I want to throw up when I look at the ABCHD signal they got on that transponder. They call it HD. What is that?
Well, it's H.264.
Oh, it looks terrible. If I lived on the island, I wouldn't even want HD after looking at that.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I'd love to learn the story about that those New York feeds being, you know, overlaid with local commercials. I'm sure there's an interesting agreement or relationship that somebody has to get those feeds down there.
I do have something to say with that. Puerto Rico... The feed?
Yeah, 99W.
Yeah, 99 West. I was like, am I getting the right station? It was I was getting the WABC of New York, and they were showing some commercial for limo service, dial 777-7777. And I was like, am I watching the right channel?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because sometimes their commercial insertion doesn't time up right.
No, I know.
And you'll see the end of a New York commercial, or they'll interrupt the network feed. It's the whole island's equivalent to the size of a small town in Kansas. So it's they do pretty good for the size of the island. Well, you know, I'm looking. There isn't much information on any other source than what people are reporting on Satellite Guys and on GoFast about COSY. I was just trying to find the FEC. Anybody know it off the top of your head? You were saying 8/9.
I thought that, but I might be wrong.
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have the micro hooked up right now. I know it's in the micro, but I've got the other one hooked up.
What are you saying, Dan?
Well, I have the LingSat papers with me. Would that help?
No, LingSat doesn't even list COSY on 103.
No. Oh, I mean, it would list that transponder, so.
And let me just see. I'm Googling it right now. You know, unfortunately, because so many receivers out there don't show the FEC, a lot of the times it's not listed on most posts.
Yeah.
So let me. I really don't have an answer for you, Dan. Why that transponder may not scan in, but it comes in. When you do a manual entry of the TP?
It looks like it's 5/6. 5/6 is what it is. So I was wrong.
Also,
no, it's still high. But.
Yeah.
So are you getting it, Dan, if you put it in manually, you said?
Yeah, it came up on the...
Okay,
on the
I thought you was getting temporary, you know, sent the quality the whole time.
No, it's on the transponder that is already comes with the channel upgrade, you know, from the satellite, the new channel list, and...
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't that transponder, didn't they do a parameter change on it in recent months?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I seen something about that.
I was thinking that I read somewhere, and, you know, I don't want to misdirect anybody, but I'm just wondering, number one, it wouldn't be unfair to say I made a mistake and put maybe a wrong parameter on that transponder. But if you manually enter it in, but it doesn't come in on the one that's manually entered in, it could be that that I just have some parameter set wrong.
Okay. Well, it's on the one that the transponder that was listed in the program on the micro HD, it said 11. The transponder is supposed to be on, and it just comes up 10%. But I had I had the cameras and the micro space and some feed out of Washington, and I was still getting a pretty decent signal. So I couldn't figure out what I need to do to get that one.
Okay, so let me just clarify. So COSY is not coming in on your system, even with a manual transponder entry.
Yeah, I manually type, and it'll just come up 10%, and it'll go down to 0.
That's what I thought, too. Okay, so...
Okay. Well, I'm showing here there's a website reporting out of Canada that it is 5/6 for the FEC. So I guess, you know, the things, I don't know what you have available to do testing on your system there, Dan, but it would be interesting to see if you had a signal meter that had a spectrum analyzer on it or something. It'd be interesting to see what that transponder is registering. It could be so close to threshold that it won't scan in on your system.
Are you in the oddball skew, Dan?
What'd you say?
The oddball skew, is he...
I couldn't remember what the skew for that was.
Well, 103 is 25 degrees off of norm.
Yeah.
So so if you're going with is this a fixed dish or a motorized dish, Dan?
Fixed dish.
And when you put it on there, did you notice your skew is quite a bit differently than what it would calculate out on one of the calculators?
Well, I was just I was just testing it and not really putting it on there to leave it on there permanently, just to test with it. and it was, it came in, and, or it 103 came in, but the Cozy didn't show up.
Yeah.
And,
well, what I would probably do is put it on one of those network channels that are coming in, and then rotate the LMBF to optimize, especially if you can get one of those ABC
yeah.
channels.
Yeah.
And then optimize your signal quality by rotating your LMBF on one of those, and then try scanning for COSY again. Because
okay.
from the reports that I've read, people seem to be challenged to get COSY even if they're getting the other ABC feeds.
Yeah.
And so
okay.
if you haven't taken any care to recognize that 103 currently has a 25-degree offset from what a normal skew would be for that satellite, then
right.
Then it really makes sense that it is not scanning in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to figure out, and it wasn't coming in, and so.
Yeah. In other words, then if you go the 97 West, 99 West, 101, 105, I skipped over 103. Everything's right in line, but 103 on KU, they messed up when they put the satellite up, and it's off. So the skew wouldn't be the same like you normally. Well, 101's right here, so 103 would be just a little bit more to the left or whatever. I know it'd be that way from where you're at in the United States, so in Indiana. Actually, it'd be way back to the right. It'd be almost the same as your true south.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, almost zero skew for 103.
And I had it on zero just to have it straight up and down, and it was coming in pretty good, so I didn't really have to
right.
find it left. And I thought it was kind of strange.
ABCs, yeah, that's why you got them, because you went back to zero, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just using my microbud setup and trying to get that, and I wanted the network feeds out of off 99, and I was watching some soccer game that came in on Friday, Saturday night.
Yeah, but for the 103, for the KU, for the COSY feed, you almost need a 1.2 meter dish or bigger. And you got to have that offset, you know, that's the oddball offset before you even think about anything else. It's because it's real hard to get in. I don't have trouble on 9 centimeters.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUYS or 877-728-4897.
I didn't mean to overstep you, Brian.
Oh, no, I was just thinking.
I was coming in and listening to this whole thing. I'm like, wait a minute, does he got the oddball skew set? And I know with the 90 centimeter dish, it's a challenge to get COSY to come in. And now that, as you know, I've got the 1.2 meter dish, and then, of course, about the same time, I found a old Prime Star, one of the big Prime Star dishes. So I set them both up playing with them last week, and I was like, whoa, okay, I can get COSY now, I can get NBC feeds now just fine, you know, as long as they do the oddball skew without having to sit there and baby it to get to come in. Now they just come right in, so it makes a difference, you know, with those. You got to have that bigger dish. You got to have everything just set just right. They're real finicky.
Well, let's see. Some of the other things that I want to chat about, you know, I just want to address, you know, we had made an announcement, the decision not to pursue 32 APS-K VCM and MIS on the micro HD. It really came down to we know that some of the receivers out there are receiving 32 APS-K in the CCM FEC for CCM format, and it just can't be guaranteed. And we worked with our part supplier, and we found that some parts that were used in the build were not as the original units that we spec'd, and we just kind of really worked a hard time trying to figure out what was going on. We thought that it was a firmware issue. We thought it was the DMOD issue. And we finally came down to some receivers out there will do 32 APXK just fine. Others will not. And so we've just decided to withdraw that from our spec just because we cannot reliably predict that it will come in.
To hit and miss, right?
It really is. And that's why you've seen reports that some people it's coming in, other people reports the same that it's not. We found out that's the same issue with quite a few of the other receivers out there where people are reporting it's coming in. And once again, it's kind of like what Dan is reporting. A lot of it has to do with the optimization of your dish, number one, to get 32 APSK to start with. You think a high FEC is finicky, add on top of that a 32 APSK, and then you'll really know if your dish is optimized. the decision as far as the VCM and the MIS, I know a couple people kind of took that announcement pretty hard because it was something that we had been assured would be compatible and received. And we did it in a closed world test, and we've always announced it on the forums that it had only been done in closed world, and we were hoping to roll it out to be reliable enough for real world signals. And we just couldn't, we just kind of ran into the brick wall on that one. So we're going to call it what it is. Our DMOD is not suitable for the purpose. And a gentleman from Europe pointed out that, yes, it can lock on. And my reply is, yes, it can lock on, but no, you can't watch it. And so there's a big difference between locking on and watching programming in my world.
Well, it's like with anything. You can play old receivers. You can lock on the scramble signal. You can lock on good signal, but you can watch it, you know.
Yeah. And so, I kind of got into a small, pointed out to him that VCM is a two-way communication. ACM, I'm sorry.
It is.
ACM is a two-way communication, and you do need to have two-way communication in order to update the receiver to follow the switching. So that will never be supported on a set-top box, in my opinion. The VCM and the MIS, it just really has to do with our demodulator selection, and it really was represented as being capable of doing it. But a lot of times you just realize that you should keep your big mouth shut until it works in the real world.
Yeah.
And so that's why, I've had a couple discussions with you guys about what the HDVR 1200 can and can't do, and I'm not going to get into this in the forum at this point, just because I don't want to put unrealistic expectations on the box until we really have them proven and working in the real world. But I can certainly tell you right now, the GeoSat Pro HDVR 1200 is a nice box. It's doing exceptionally well for the Glory Star customers right now. And I want to recognize an excellent review, Michael. You did a great job on that review. I liked how it was very conversational. And I like that you point out the good and bad because, every time I give a product to anybody to test or to be part of a beta test, I want to know your real response. I don't want anything sugar-coated. If the receiver is not suitable, tell me.
Yeah, it's crap, too. It's crap. But...
Yeah, and I would rather hear that and then have real directions on how to improve it.
I would say, if I was in your shoes, I would, I feel says, no, you don't want to hear that, right? Yeah. If I was in your shoes, I would want to know that.
Equipment.
What did I miss? What am I seeing here?
I want people to buy GeoSat Pro equipment because it's recommended by other people because it works for them, not because, we're a sponsor. And, it's kind of a hard thing. Scott, are you still there?
No, he's not on.
No.
Okay. It's something that I've always, I hesitated to even have a micro HD forum, sub-forum on the site. because I don't want that receiver to be viewed as, oh, that's the satellite guy's receiver.
Yeah.
Because it's not. It never has been. I solicited everybody's response and input before we developed it. And during the development, and we try to listen and try to make improvements based on everybody's feedback. But, you know, it really, I want products to sell because people go, oh, man, this is different. This works
right.
better. This has better performance. This is thicker metal. This is a heavier LMB. This gives me a little more points or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want it just to go, oh, well, they're promoting it because it's on satellite guys. Heck,
yeah.
That's the last thing I want for our equipment.
Yeah, or any other website. Yeah, besides your own.
You know, and that was something that, you know, I know that there's a lot of resellers out there that choose not to sell our equipment because of our affiliation with Satellite Guys, and it kind of saddens me because, you know, we are a very active member on the forum, and, you know, I hope that the advice that I give is not self-serving, and a lot of times it certainly isn't. But, you know, we chose to be part of Satellite Guys just because I really like the community, and, you know, it has its ups and downs like any forum, but it's always been a very strong forum in supporting the end user. And instead of trying to go out there and create our own forum just to support our own products and to wave a flag and you know, sell our own product, I would rather kind of have the product review by just hobbyists and let the dice roll.
Well, I'm going to say this. What I like about you, Brian, isn't not kissing butt or not whatever, is that you're so humble about everything. You know, you're...
Oh, you don't... You evidently don't know me.
Well...
even my mother wouldn't say I'm humble.
Well, you know what I mean, but...
Hey, you know, I come from the background of being a hobbyist first, and
right.
I happen to be blessed and privileged to have a company to develop satellite products, to develop products, and have to have the ear of developers and manufacturers to produce what I want to have in my own house.
Right.
And that's the way I approach every product. That
that's
if I'm going to go out and buy somebody else's product, it's for a darn good reason. And,
yeah.
You know, for 422, there's a reason I have a Prof, 7301, and I have a TBS 6925. There's a reason I buy those products, because they're specialized for what I want to do as a hobbyist.
Yeah.
And I recognize that there's many other products. You know, I see the pluses and minuses of all of our competitors' products. And I want to let you know I buy pretty much every product that my competitor puts out there, so I know what my benchmark is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I like how you get in there and back on the forums. You'll get in there and you'll say, hey, this is whatever, blah, 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 and it's a good product. I like it. And it's not your product, and you're in business, your competition, sort of, kind of. But you'll still say, you know, and still say, no, that's a piece of crap. Don't buy that. Even though it's a good product, you'll try to promote your own self. You would actually get in there and be honest and humble, but honest, you know, and just, you know, that's what I like.
I'll take honest, but I won't take humble, okay?
Okay, you're not humble.
So, hey, Brian, so what I'm interested in while we got you on the line is with G19, how long of a transition do you think we'll have to get all the channels on that or over to MPEG-4? Do you think that will be several years?
Well,
that's
it's quite interesting.
Question.
Yeah, you know, we look at this from two ways. We work very closely with a couple of the uplinkers there. You know, we work very closely with RRSAT, with Pittsburgh and San Francisco International Gateway. They have a major client base that they are kind of challenged what they're going to put on these transponders. So these transponders, they need to kind of make a decision of what they're going to do with it, MPEG-2, MPEG-4, H.264, et cetera. So we're looking at it from a standpoint of what kind of investment do these guys have in their own encoders. Number two, you have a lot of broadcasters who are trying to reach as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the sheer numbers, and if you believe the, and I don't mean that derogatorily, but if you look at the numbers, there's an estimated 6 or 7 million people who have active systems watching Galaxy 19 in North America. Well, if you look at that number and then you go, okay, how many of those people have an MK4 or an H.264 receiver? Well, if you bring a new service on and that new service is H.264 or MPEG-4, suddenly that broadcaster has to develop their own market. And so my prediction is, and it's kind of the way that the uplinkers are looking at it as well, is that really the only broadcasters on G19 who are considering H.264 or MPEG-4 technology are people who don't give a hoot about existing customers and they're creating their own viewers. Unfortunately, that's a pretty small group. And
that kind of falls into the question I've got. With the way technology things are going, maybe 10 years, 20 years, maybe 5 years, what's your thoughts on how many is going to start dropping out and going to, say, IP, you know, going through the internet stream like Sky Angel did? And dropping off of GoreStar.
I'll address that two ways. We're seeing every year the numbers increase right now. This is in a time where devices like Roku can be bought now at Walmart.
Yeah.
The reality is we live in North America where you cannot use IP streaming devices on internet broadband. We don't have IP over power lines. We don't have Wi-Fi, wide area Wi-Fi yet.
Right.
I think the game changer in this, and people are going to cringe when they hear me say this, but I think Dish Network is right on the ball to be buying into cellular technology. Unfortunately, we're not like Europe, and we embraced a terrestrial technology that requires, pretty unique equipment that isn't universal. I mean, it's not like you can slap another tuner in your DVB-S2 receiver and start getting over-the-air television.
Right.
And I'll take that one step farther. Mobile. You know, everything right now is mobile and portable, handheld devices.
Yep.
And in Europe, they can handle that because DVB-T, they have DVB-T mobile. They have all these variations of DVB technology that you can just slap another tuner and tickle the firmware a little bit, and it's the same firmware, just running a different tuner. Over here, we're in mass geographic areas where these people are stuck in dial-up, and if they have broadband, they're band-capped.
Yeah.
So how are you going to get entertainment to these people?
Yeah.
Satellite tech, and that's addressing how to get it to people in home. Bigger is how do you get it to the device in people's hands. I think the biggest threat right now is not broadband. It's not Roku. It's people choosing to go to mobile devices.
Yeah.
And that's the hidden, that's that elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, broadcasters shot themselves in the foot when they chose a technology that could not be supported for hardly terrestrial world, let alone mobile and moving devices.
Yeah.
They gave their future away to a technology that they have no interest in, they have no ownership of.
Yeah.
And it's quite amazing that as we see DVB-T and now DVB-T2 flourishing in Europe. We just heard an announcement. We see announcements of a new format of ATSC coming along, ATSC Mobile.
Yeah, I know.
When are we going to get a clue and start following the world?
Hey, I'm on the same thoughts with you. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it since you're, right there in an industry every day looking at it and see, because that's exactly what I was thinking, exactly about what you said.
Well, there's some strong products out there. I mean, Michael, no doubt about it. There are products like LTN, and I posted a link up there a couple of years ago. A good friend of mine, Jeff Witaska, that used to be with Pittsburgh, as a salesperson with Pittsburgh Telecommunications Uplink. He represents LTN. LTN is a point-to-point multi-point that uses internet, public internet,
yeah.
And clients like networks, ESPN Sports, everybody is using this to backhaul using public internet. So the point-to-point, I think we're going to see when a event is happening in a venue, you're going to see more and more of them leaning towards fiber or internet protocol.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. Why roll a truck? Why pay for satellite time when you can have a producer pull a encoder out of his backpack, plug it into a dedicated line, and
yep.
do a backhaul?
Yeah, plug it on the fiber and you're ready to go.
So, things like that, those are going to be the things. Is satellite going to go away? No. We live in a vast geographic region that there are no cell coverage. There is no Wi-Fi coverage, for direct-to-home and for backhaul feeds and everything else. It's going to stay there, and I think we're going to see products come in that are going to definitely give it a run for the money. But, that big, fat bandwidth of getting a beautiful signal up there for distribution to cable head ends on C-band,
yeah,
that's not going to go away, It's
Well, Brian, we've enjoyed you having you on the show tonight.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I see a couple of things that we have on our list that we didn't talk about, anytime, I would love to chat with you guys.
Yeah, I definitely want to get you back on here in a couple of weeks, if that's okay with you.
Hey, I'm going to give you guys a big kind of a target on the cloud to shoot for.
Okay.
Get the show polished up, and we have bandwidth on G19, and I'd be happy to expand your coverage to make it an occasional usage.
No.
So, polish this thing up and make it sing, and let's talk about getting the satellite show on the satellite again.
All right.
There we go. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your time tonight.
Let
me ask you a question real quick, Brian, before you go, because we run over time here. Of course, we actually is set to go to 9:30 or 6:30 your time, but we want to probably end around 9 o'clock, but or 6 o'clock your time. But I just got to ask: didn't give Michael HD ways tonight. Do you want to save another show, or do you want to put it on the forum and throw it out there and give it away?
Well, I'm going to leave that up to you. I've committed to giving away a micro HD for your show.
Right.
And, certainly I'm totally committed to that. So if you want to use it to promote your show and, remember some of the contests that I used to hold where you get input and people's interaction, play with it.
Okay.
Let's get people listening to the show and let's get it hot.
That's what I'm going to do with it, man. I'm going to put it up and that's what I'll do with it. But I appreciate you having me on the show. I really do.
Well, enjoy listening. I could not get the different apps, Blog Talk and everything, to work on my iPhone, so I downloaded Tuned In. Very cool app, by the way. And I listened to you guys.
Yeah, we're on Tuned In now, yeah.
Yeah, so mobile, here's another example of the time. I don't have a working AM, FM radio. I just have... Just stream to it or listen to my iTunes. So Tuned In is a great way to listen to Satellite Guys on your iPhone.
Yeah. It is.
Well, guys, thanks for having me on this evening. And, I'm going to be posting up some things on the forum, and I think we're going to have some people really excited about that DeSeek 1.2 controlled polarizer control.
That's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see what that turns into.
Yeah,
project's coming along, and I just wanted to be reminded of the old school technology to see if we're missing something here, just to make sure it's implemented. And, really the one thing that stood out in my mind, I was going to put a, on the remote control, we're going to put a left polarized, right polarized, for fine tuning. But then this old analog knob just kind of looked at me and said, "You need an analog knob on this thing."
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
So I think because of this great gift that the Flat Moon gave me here, I think you're going to see an analog knob on this thing. Take us old school.
All right.
Sounds good. Well, everybody, have a good night.
Have a good evening, Brian. And
good
thanks
evening, guys.
To everybody for tuning in to Satellite Nation. This is episode number 7, and join us next week, May the 15th, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another show.